kuimba au kutendeleza.
Hello, this is Rabbi Gershom Sizomu, the spiritual lead of the Abaidaya congregation in Uganda. You are here live on State Hall on the short web.
You're listening to Shtetl on the Shortwave on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Tamara Kramer. Teching the show today is Nicole Hebert. Shtetl is a Yiddish word that means small town or village. Shtetl on the Shortwave is a radio show about Jewish arts and culture in Montreal. To download this show and to get a taste of what's happening in the world of alternative culture, go to shtetlmontreal.com. Stay tuned for a great show. But you chose them that way.
Sans toi, je suis trop malheureux. Mon cœur est devenu froid. Et moi, je n'ouvre plus les yeux. Reviens encore une fois. L'amour est parti. Comme l'oiseau dans la nuit, chanter UNLVD.
At the lights and cameras, the actions asking, the question of action.
Hey, welcome to Shtetl on the Shortwave on May 20th. We have an insanely packed show today, literally packed. Right now in the studio, we have Karina Rose setting up their equipment. They're going to be playing live for you today. It's just a little teaser for their show tonight at the Barfly. Also in the studio, we have Avia Moore, and she is the director of the Dybbuk. A play happening at the Sala Rosa starting May 22nd to the May 25th. Everything that we're going to be talking about on the show today is a little bit off the beaten path, Jewish arts and culture in Montreal, things that you might not know about, but that you definitely should know about. There's so much happening in Montreal. It starts now, spring until fall. The whole city goes completely crazy with festivals and music and dance and culture, and it's no different in the Jewish arts scene here in the city. And so there's the Dybbuk, there's all kinds of music happening, and there's also, for the first time ever in Montreal, an event called Le Mood. It's a one-day festival of Jewish arts, culture, and learning. It's taking place on June 5th, and it's a very, very unique day that brings together a very disparate group of people. There's going to be sessions, all volunteer-run, a session called Beyond Bagels and Bannock, all about social justice and the environment in the Aboriginal community and the Jewish community. There's going to be a session with So-Called, whose song we just heard at the top of the show from his new album, Sleepover. He's going to be teaching us how to mix it up, which is definitely a skill that everybody needs today, how to mix music. And Shtetl on the Shortwave is doing one of the sessions there in conjunction with a group in the city called the Mailan Chavura. We're going to do a session called Loaded, Jews and Money. Oh my God, I'm scared. But it's going to be really good, an exploration of the myths and the history of Jews and money. And one of the people that you might not expect to be involved in such an eclectic festival is Stephen Bronfman, and he's going to be doing a couple of sessions at the festival as well, and he's going to be a guest on the second half of the show today. So stay tuned for the second half of Shtetl on the Shortwave, and we're going to talk live with Stephen Bronfman. But first, I'd like to introduce the guests that are right here in this amazingly compact CKUT Shtetl studio. Avia Moore, welcome to Shtetl on the Shortwave.
Thank you.
And also, while the band is setting up, I'm going to talk with Avia. So do you guys want to introduce yourselves? Karina Rose?
Yeah, sure. I'm Karina Rose. Do you want me to introduce you? Yeah. All right. So next to me, I've got Matt Daher, who's going to be playing on the drums, Nicolas Goldmer on the electric guitar, and Alex Leblanc on the bass.
And Nicolas is playing not only an electric guitar, but hot pink electric guitar in keeping with the Shtetl colors. Awesome. So I want to start by talking with you, Avia. You specialize in devised performance and collective creation. You have a BA in drama from the University of Alberta and a master's in devised theater from Dartington College in England. And you're the founder of Uncatalogued Productions and, of course, the director of this new production, The Dybbuk.
That's all correct.
All correct. And there's so much more, so much more. But we'll keep it to that for now. So what does devised theater mean?
Devised theater is more of the European vocabulary for what here we call collective creation. So basically starting building a performance from scratch with a group, with a collective.
Okay, like
it's a pretty broad term. No, improvising can be part of the process. In the end result, you may not actually be able to tell the difference between a devised performance and a traditional script-based performance.
Okay.
It's the process that's different.
Is the Dybbuk a devised performance?
Well, not really, because in the Dybbuk, we did start, obviously, with the script, which is a part of the Jewish canon. But my approach, because my specialty is devised theater, my approach tends to be more of a collective approach rather than asking telling the actors, you know, stand here, go stand there. We really work together to find the performance.
Okay, cool. So you're here because you are the director of this incredible play that's coming up. The posters that are around town are really beautiful.
Thank you.
And you designed them yourself, so they're amazing.
It's a small ensemble. We're all multitasking.
Okay, like making the costumes, everything. So can you tell listeners who might never have heard of the Dybbuk a little bit about like the history of the play and what the plot is? What is the play about?
Sure. So the play was written by S. Ansky, who was a Russian Jew and is famous as a Jewish ethnographer who collected Jewish folklore and Jewish, particularly Jewish music folklore all through Russia and Ukraine. And this was in the first half of the last century, or the first bit of the last century. So the Dybbuk is one of his only plays. He only wrote a couple of plays, and it was written around 1912, 1913, 1914, produced originally in Hebrew. It was written in Yiddish, okay, based on some of his ethnographic findings, so specific on stories from collected in Ukraine, and but first produced in Hebrew by the Habima, directed by Vakhtangov, and part of the Moscow Art Theater, which is a pretty big deal.
Okay.
And then later produced in Poland by the Vilna Trupa, which was the Habima troupe and the Vilna troupe. Those are the kind of iconic productions of this, the original iconic. We still, everybody who produces it now looks at those photos as the original.
Okay. And what is the basic storyline of the play, The Dybbuk? I think a lot of people listening might not know what a Dybbuk is. Do you want to explain what that is and then tell us a bit about the play?
Sure. So a Dybbuk is a lost soul, a soul of someone who has died before completing what they needed to do on Earth. But as opposed to the soul itself, it's the phenomenon of the soul that returns to haunt a human body, to possess a human body in order to complete its purpose on Earth. It's not always an evil spirit, though many of the stories or myths that we have of Dybbuks are not particularly nice ones. It's not inherently an evil idea.
Okay.
So the story is, I like to describe it as the Yiddish Romeo and Juliet.
Uh-huh.
The Yiddish Romeo and Juliet meets kind of haunted ghost story. We have a pair of star-crossed lovers who are predestined from before they were born to be together. But they are kept from being together through various circumstances. But they do meet and fall in love, but they're unable to marry. And Honan, the boy, in trying to get to Leia, the girl, gets involved in Kabbalah and Jewish mysticism that's way over his head, and it actually kills him in the process. And on the eve of her wedding to another man that her father wants her to marry,
a wealthy man, he returns
to haunt her. Ooh. And then the second half of the play is the exorcism process.
Wow.
Of Leia.
So we get to see the exorcism in the play?
Yeah.
Okay. And traditionally, there is a huge cast, right, for the Dybbuk? It's like there could be 30 people in the production?
Yeah, it's written for 30-plus characters, maybe 20 characters with a lot of lines and half a dozen or a dozen characters with one line each.
Okay, and you're doing it with 5 people.
Yeah, we're doing it with 5 people, so we have a changing cast of characters. I'd say we've cut it down to about 18-19 characters, but all played by 5 individuals.
And they're 5 women.
And 5 women, yeah.
Why 5 women?
Well, it was a choice we made based on the process of auditioning and getting started, and the cast that we wanted ended up being these 5 amazing women. And so we made the choice to explore what it's like for women to inhabit a inherently masculine world. The world of the Dybbuk is the world of Hasidism and kind of traditional Jewish life, and it's male dominated. You know, we have Leia, the main character of the play, is unable to do or achieve what she wants to in life. Throughout the play, she's stopped from what she wants because of all the men in her life, the rabbis, her father. So we have women all playing men. Wow. We don't actually change the characters at all. All the women play men. You know, how often do women get to play Hasidic rabbis?
Right. Yeah. I dressed up like a Hasidic rabbi for Purim.
There you go.
It's
well,
so
Purim's the one
liberating
day of the year when it's allowed, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, I recently found there's a clip of Angels in America where Meryl Streep plays an old Hasidic rabbi, you know, a Flatbush Hasidic rabbi. It's phenomenal. So we're not setting a precedent here. The precedent's already been set.
But in Montreal, this is a pretty groundbreaking production, I think.
It's exciting.
Okay. We're going to take a moment to... Are you guys ready, Karina Rose? You ready to go? Not yet. Okay. Give me the thumbs up when you're ready to play. Okay. This is a very exciting, exciting day for Shtetl on the Shortwave because it's the first time ever that there's a whole band playing. We've had musicians who've sat with their guitar and just like sung into the mic, but never have we gone to this level of setup for a band. And I know it's totally worth it. And so we're just going to give them their time to make it sound just right. So Avia, I wanted to ask you about the Yiddish component of the play because
sure.
It was originally written in Yiddish, mm-hmm. But it's going to be performed an English translation, right?
Yeah, we're using the 1926 English translation, which is beautiful and very poetic. And I have reintroduced or reinserted a bunch of the Yiddish into the play in strategic parts.
Okay.
So we've used the Yiddish to really heighten the difference between worlds. So we've really heightened the difference between an old world and a new world, and a spiritual world and a money world. And while there is quite a bit of Yiddish that has been reintroduced into the play, it's been brought in such a way that somebody who doesn't understand Yiddish will not lose any of the storyline.
Okay.
But they need to embrace as they come in the not understanding of it. Because in addition to the other components, this heightens this kind of the strangeness of the Dybbuk, right? She's possessed by a foreign entity, something that nobody understands. And by having that foreign entity speak Yiddish, I'm just giving away secrets in the play now, but we let the audience a little bit into that world. And I also really love the idea that different people in the audience experience a slightly different show. So we will have Yiddish speakers at the show mm-hmm. in the audience, and they'll get different secrets and cues, different clues and cues that reference their worlds, and English speakers get a whole different experience.
Okay. This is the first time that I've heard about a Yiddish play being performed at the Sala Rosa in English, in sort of like this hip Milan community. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Yiddish theater scene in Montreal.
Because, sure.
Okay. You're actually going to be speaking this summer at the International Yiddish Theater Festival that's taking place in June. It's June 13th to the 22nd, and there's an academic symposium as part of the festival. And you're one of the academics that are going to be speaking, which is amazing because there are some there are incredible people coming from all over the world, people who are leaders in their field. And there's also all these young people in the different sessions talking about Yiddish theater. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're going to be talking about where you hope or where you see Yiddish theater might be going in the future.
Yeah, somewhat like that. I'm going to be giving a paper based on the research I did in my master's degree program, which is about cultural memory and performance.
Okay.
And that research that I've been doing leads up to this kind of search for how culture is changing and how the way we represent culture is changing and the way we perform culture. So I like to give an example of so-called.
Okay.
You know, so-called incorporates a lot of really beautiful traditional snippets into his work. You know, he takes things and he remixes them.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that a lot in Yiddish music and in other aspects of Yiddish culture. And it's something we haven't seen a whole lot of in Yiddish theater. So while I don't claim by any means to be an expert in Yiddish theater, I have been involved in the cultural scene for long enough now to notice that element lacking. And I would like to, that's what I want to play with. And I don't know if I've achieved it in this show. I think it's kind of a lifelong work. But that's what my symposium paper will be about. I think it's really amazing these days we have a lot of young academics in the Yiddish community who are leaders in their fields. And it's really beautiful to bring the generations of academics and artists together.
I just got a note from Nicole, the tech, telling me that we are going to have to take a little ad break and do a quick sound check. So we're going to be doing that, and then we're going to come back with Avia Moore and Karina Rose. And Avia, I'm sorry that I didn't mean to cut you off there. But I'm curious. I still want to talk more with you if you want to stick around, because I'm curious to talk a little bit more about how people who don't know Yiddish and who might not know the text, how they can come to appreciate Yiddish culture and theater, and especially here in Montreal where there's such a rich tradition of it, but where there's so many Jewish people in the community who have no exposure at all. So
yeah.
How can that work? So we're going to take a quick break and be back. And thanks for tuning in to Shtetl on the Shortwave.
Shtetl, oi! What is it? Shtetl what?
Shtetl on the Shortwave.
Hello, Ma. It's me, Mira. Peaches. Afasa Kim. You're listening to Shtetl on the Shortwave. Oy vey. On CIUT.
CKUT.
Oh. On CKUT. Now you have to do editing.
No, it's perfect.
Oy vey. Shtetl, oi.
Work it until you know the score.
Working with what you got.
You gotta work it till if no more.
Let me hear you sing.
I know it's hard, but it takes some work to be.
Working with what you got.
If you got nothing, or even if you got it all.
Working with what you got.
Working with what you got, oh baby.
Working with what you got.
If you got nothing, or even if you got it all. Anytime you see life shows you a curve, and you're deep in your heart, you don't deserve.
You're back in the Shtetl on the Shortwave studio, and we are going to be experiencing a cross between a live sound check with Karina Rose and their first ever performance on the show. It's very exciting. I love seeing Karina Rose holding her banjo right in front of me and the pink electric guitar. Do you guys want to just tell me one last time, introduce yourself so people will know who we're listening to?
Yeah, I'm Karina Rose. I'll be playing some banjo and guitar and singing a bit. To my left, I've got Nicolas Gaudemer on guitar, Alex Leblanc on the bass, and Matt Daher on the drums.
Perfect.
We're going to start with a song called Born on a Mountain. It's one of our songs off of our upcoming EP, which is coming out in July.
Okay, go for it.
Cool, all right. Thank you.
guys, it was worth it. All this setup. Oh my God. And also a lesson in how to set up the band. Actually, no, I didn't really get a lesson. That was Joe Wiener, who, Wiener? Yeah, Wiener. Joe Wiener, who busted his ass to set that all up really quickly. First of all, would you guys mind playing a second song as long as you're all set up? Okay, and so one of your songs is going to be in a Sarah Polley movie? Is that true?
Yes, it is true. Basically, it's called Green Mountain State, and it's going to be featured over the opening credits of Sarah Polley's upcoming film called Take This Waltz.
Wow.
I'm not sure when the film is going to be released yet, but we'll have news for sure.
Okay, congratulations. What's this next song that you're going to play?
This next song is called Belle Guitare, which is also off of our new EP.
Belle Guitare?
Belle Guitare.
All right.
I wrote it while I was in Trois Pistoles learning French, so there's two French lyrics in the whole song, although the rest is in English. Baby steps, exactly. Moving here from Toronto takes time. All right.
You moved here from Toronto?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because you know that one of my favorite interviews that I ever did for Shtetl on the Shortwave was with your grandfather. Yeah, and so I thought for sure that you were from Montreal.
Yeah, well, I guess my family's from Montreal, and then my mom moved to Toronto and had me, and then I guess, you know, this felt like home from the beginning anyway.
Okay.
My grandparents are still here. I moved back, went to school, and yeah, I guess that's it.
It's the whole Gulkin family. Yeah. Harry Gulkin, the grandfather, yeah. Corey Gulkin. All right, yeah. Karina Rose.
All right.
Went out to the Rockies with my church and my family, with nothing but a bicycle and a pretty penny. All I want right now is a less simple life than I have. Woke up one morning, smoke was swirling around the sky. I burned it all with my cigarette, except a pair of boxes and you, my bad guitar. But how can a story out so pretty make me feel so goddamn ugly? And how can a story out so pretty make me feel? Got held up by a druggie, he accused me of stealing health. Knife up to my throat, you see the scar where I was bleeding. All I want right now is a less simple life than I have. I told my girl that she was slipping through my fingers, I couldn't hold her. I made eyes with another, but I swear I didn't touch her. All I want right now is a less simple life than I have. But
Hört sich die Shtetl auf den Shortwave auf CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
So that was Karina Rose on Shtetl on the Shortwave. Beautiful, beautiful, live, full sound. This is very exciting. It's the first time ever we've had such a full band in the studio. So thank you so much, guys. And you can check out Karina Rose tonight at the Barfly.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we're playing with Christopher Durning and Scott Nix, shows around 10 o'clock.
Okay, perfect. And the Barfly, everybody knows where that is. It's on Saint Laurent, right, not too far from Duluth, near Leica. And it's actually, it used to be a Yiddish newspaper, the Knadler Adler or something. There's a sign outside. So when you go see Karina Rose tonight at the Barfly, check out the plaque outside and you'll see a little bit of Jewish Montreal history. And I just want to take one more minute before we take a break and get on the ringer with Stephen Bronfman. I wanted to talk about how people can get tickets for the Dybbuk, because Avia Moore is still here in the studio. And Avia, where can people go to get tickets for the play?
Okay, so all the information is actually on the website. That's probably the simplest thing. It's the Dybbuk, THEDYBBUK dot aviamoore.com, AVIAMOORE.com. But you can also just walk up to Casa del Popolo or call them or go on their website and tickets are available. Then I want to point out that tickets are only $10 in advance. That's pretty good deal for theater in Montreal. And if you wait too long and get them at the door, they're $15 or $20.
Okay. And also, I forgot to ask you, but at the beginning of every show, there's going to be a musical performance, right?
Yeah.
Who's playing before the shows?
Okay. So on Sunday night, we have Kyle and, oh, it's a duo led by my friend Kyle, who is doing, it's a Baroque duo on okay. Sunday night. On Monday night, it's a duo led by Yoni Kasten. Okay. On Tuesday night, a duo led by Jason Rosenblatt, and on Wednesday night, a duo of Christian David and Sergio Popa.
Wow. Okay, so before every show, in addition to seeing this innovative new play, The Dybbuk, people will also get to see a musical show,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the music is right at showtime, so it's about a 25-minute set of music, and then the show starts.
Okay, perfect. Avia, thank you so much for coming on to Shtetl on the Shortwave, and
I
look very forward to seeing the play, really. Thank you so much for putting all the work that you have into producing it and directing it and starring in it.
No, I'm not in it.
Okay.
But I am going to go home and keep sewing buttons on the coats
okay,
now.
Go sew buttons. Go sew buttons. All right. Okay, so we are going to take a little break right now. We're going to hear Karina Rose one more time at the end of the show. But before we do, we're going to talk with Stephen Bronfman. I'm going to give him a call, and we're going to take a break for an ad. And we'll find out more about Stephen when we come back.
When Moses ascended Mount Sinai, he went to hear God's word. When the prophet descended, he came carrying tablets inscribed with God's will.
Thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt be fruitful and
thou
multiply.
Thou shalt and multiply.
Thou shall listen
thou
to Shtetl on the Shortwave on CKUT 90.3 FM.
All right, we're back on Shtetl on the Shortwave, and we have had quite a packed show today. We've been listening to a lot of great music. We had live in the studio Karina Rose, and we've also been treated to a whole bunch of tracks off of the new so-called album called Sleepover. And so-called is going to be, as I mentioned earlier, doing a mixing session, how to mix music, at this event called Le Mood. And Le Mood is happening on June 5th. It's at a place called Espace Réunion, and it's a very, very interesting new initiative for Montreal. It's a day-long festival of Jewish arts, culture, and learning. And there are all kinds of sessions that are going to be happening there. It's very eclectic. And one of the people that's going to be involved and doing a session at Le Mood called What It's Like to Be a Bronfman is Stephen Bronfman himself. And he's on the line with us right now. Stephen, you there?
Hi, I'm here. Hi, Tamara.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks. I'm doing two sessions. I'm doing one on baseball, Jews and baseball as well.
Okay, what's that one going to be about? What are you going to be talking
about?
Oh,
I'm going to be sitting with Mitch Melnick and Sean Starr, a bunch of guys from the baseball world and Team 990, and we've got a film called Jews and Baseball that was somewhat financed, I guess, by my dad. And we'll be showing clips and just talking about Jews and baseball.
What's your connection to baseball?
Well, my dad started the Expos in 1969, so I guess I grew up with baseball.
What does that mean, he started the Expos?
he was the founder of the Montreal Expos in 1969 in Montreal. So he was the first one who brought baseball out of the United States into Canada.
Okay. And I think I read that there was like a whole, you were sort of spearheaded this whole initiative to try to keep the Expos here in Montreal. And
that is true.
And what happened with that? Obviously, we know what happened with that.
All of a sholem.
Exactly.
That didn't work.
It didn't work.
And we didn't get, you know, I mean, there's this good project right now in Quebec City with plenty of government support and possibly corporate support. And you know, had we had those types of support back, I guess, a decade ago, we would probably be going to baseball games here today.
Right. So I think most Jewish Montrealers have heard of the Bronfman family. It's an incredibly important family in the history of Montreal. And maybe some people who are listening might not have heard of the Bronfmans. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the history of your family in Montreal? Who are the Bronfmans?
Oh, boy.
That's a big one.
You know, but it's interesting because my grandmother and grandfather, actually, when they came over, when they got off the boat, I guess, at the turn of the century from Russia, mm-hmm. they were out in Saskatchewan and in Manitoba.
Okay.
So originally, I guess my grandfather's family went to Saskatchewan. They were tobacco farmers back in Bessarabia, which was southern Russia. They moved to Saskatchewan and planted their crop and lost everything. I mean, they didn't have the internet or the weather network. They didn't realize that southern Russia was a much more palatable climate than midlands of Saskatchewan. So they lost everything and ended up going door-to-door selling wood chips and ended up then becoming farmers. They moved to Manitoba. My grandfather met my grandmother. My grandfather went into the hotel business, and he realized in the hotel business in Winnipeg that his hotel wasn't doing all that well, but his bar was doing very, very well. So he sort of struck out and went in search of how he could expand his business in the liquor area, and found a company in Waterloo, Ontario, called Joseph E. Seagram's & Sons, mm-hmm. which he acquired.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually moved to Montreal.
Why did they decide to move to Montreal?
Montreal was Canada's business center, and that's really why. My grandfather wanted to be in the mix. He wanted to become a powerful businessman, which he became. And in order to do so, I guess Montreal was up to, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, really the focal point of business in Canada.
Wow. This is a very inspiring story, from door-to-door wood chip salesman to millionaire. Can happen
yes,
to anybody.
For sure.
So there are a lot of stories that we hear about the beginnings of the Bronfman family, and I was wondering if you might know of any of those interesting stories that come when we hear about the beginning of the Seagram's company, if you have any stories of the history of that, and also of your relationship with your grandfather, Samuel.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the toughest call, and it was on, there was a very good documentary that was done on the family that was run on CBC quite a few times, just about the Bronfmans. And one of the, I think, most important business calls that my grandfather made was when Prohibition was lifted in the States. They said, Sam, you gotta sell your product. You gotta flood the States with your product. And he said, no, I can't. It's not ready. So a lot of people ended up selling whatever they had, which was really not of good quality. My grandfather held back for 2 years and then finally released what he felt was ready, his Canadian rye, which in the U.S. was called Seagram 7, released it then, and that really built the reputation of Seagram being really a very, very high quality branded product. And so that was really what was the toughest call that he probably made in the early days, and really what launched the company to be such a high-class product.
Okay. And I was reading a bit about your own career path, and it sounds like it was a bit eclectic. Like, you started off thinking that maybe you'd want to be a professional skier, and you worked, I think, in marketing for the Expos, and then you went to school and studied a little bit in geology. Interesting. And then, from what I understood, you sort of resisted going into the family business, but then had a change of heart. Why did you resist it at first, and what happened to change your mind?
Yeah, I guess, you know, that's kind of one of the questions that you mentioned at the beginning, was what it's like being a Bronfman. I guess sometimes it's difficult when you're young. You have so many choices. You have, a grandfather and father that have made such huge marks on society, not just in business, but in community, and how can one ever live up to those levels? So I guess it was an interesting youth for me. I mean, I had a lot of great opportunities, but at the same time, I guess there was some fear involved as well. You know, it's kind of like the great line from Mel Brooks' 2,000-year-old man when he was asked, well, what was your motivation? What form of travel did you guys use? He said, mainly fear. You know, so fear was, you know, I mean, it's daunting. And then I guess as you grow, and I was able to try a bunch of things. And I guess the best thing my dad ever, best lesson my dad ever gave to me was to say, son, whatever you do, just be as good as you can be. You know, just do it the best that you can. So that was pretty inspiring for me. But again, it's tough to have a lot of choices. So you just try things and you go through different iterations and you end up finding what it is that you're going to end up doing.
I guess there's a lot of pressure to succeed, and you're in the public eye. So if you do fail at something that you do, everybody sees it. And I've wanted to ask you if there was ever a moment in your life, a thought that crossed your mind where you wished that you didn't carry the Bronfman name.
You know what? Probably at some point when I was younger, you know, I mean, I wasn't crazy about being driven to school by a driver and I'd have him drop me off a block away from school so people wouldn't see me. And there was some of that sort of stuff, which is kind of silly, but it is what it is. Today it's, you know, it really is a blessing and it's an honor. It's an honor to be here in Montreal, to be representing the family, living up to whatever expectations. I'm very comfortable with what we're doing, living in the family home that was my grandfather's home, a lot of kids, doing good business and doing a lot in community. So, you know, it's been a great journey so far.
Okay, this is my last question about the youth of Stephen Bronfman. Why would you get dropped off a block away from school so that people wouldn't see, like, it was your family?
I was embarrassed.
You were embarrassed.
You know, I mean, you got all your friends. You don't want to have... my dad had a driver at the time, and he would take him on to the office, and he would drop me off on the way to school, and I would say, no, drop me off on this block, and then let me take the bus home, please.
What school did you go to?
St. George's.
St. George's, okay. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your work in philanthropy, because you're very involved in the community here in Montreal, and I was wondering, what are some of the causes that are nearest and dearest to your heart?
Yeah, well, I've been on the board of the David Suzuki Foundation for about 15 years.
So okay.
I've been doing that, and we've started a David Suzuki Foundation Quebec office about 5 years ago that I spearheaded, and that's going very, very well as well. We're involved. The family's always been involved in the arts, and so my wife and I are funding a few projects here in Montreal in association with the Musée d'Art Contemporain,
okay.
Doing seminars, which is courses for collectors. We're also doing, we're also supporting... artists out of the master's programs of Concordia and UQAM. We're involved with another environmental leadership training program for young kids, for high school kids, 14 to 16, called Sévère, which has been very, very popular. We started it ourselves, and all of a sudden it really clicked with the provincial government and their jeunesse department, and we got a large check from them last year to expand the project across the province. So that was a really nice pat on the back, made us all feel
okay.
Great.
C'est vert, it's green.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why is the environment like the number one cause that you're most interested in, would you say?
I guess it's all personal, and I guess with philanthropy, if you're going to be successful or if you're going to be effective, you've got to really believe and you've got to really be passionate about what you're doing. I've always been an outdoor person, and it's just a connection that I have, and I think that the world would be a better place if everyone had at least experience, outdoor experience and experience in nature, able to fish, able to hike, just able to look at beautiful things.
Okay, so Stephen, we're coming to the end of the show, and I feel like there's probably a million questions that I could ask you. I'm very curious, and I think other people are too, and I think it's good that we're getting cut a little.
Well, you'll have to come see Limoud. You'll have to come see my session at Limoud.
Exactly.
You know, we've been working with Mike, who you know very well, Savitoski, who's been doing a great job.
Yes.
And we're also, Claudia and I, very passionate about the Montreal Jewish community, and we're doing a lot of work in outreach and trying to reach out to people that, you know, might not be all that traditional, might be sort of on the sidelines saying, well, you know, I'm interested in my Jewish roots, or I'm interested, but I don't necessarily want to go the traditional way. So we're trying to touch all different types of people in this community.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for coming on to Shtetl on the Shortwave, and I look forward to attending your session at Limoud.
Right on. Thanks so much, Tamara.
Okay, take care.
Okay, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Oh my goodness, it's so rare that I say on the show Shabbat Shalom, but it was nice that he said it to me. Very nice, it's rare. Shabbat Shalom meaning have a restful Sabbath, and I most certainly will, and especially after tonight. Well, not that I go to see concerts on the Sabbath, I don't, but I'm making one big exception tonight to go see Karina Rose. They're going to be playing at the Barfly, and that really takes us to the end of the show. So I just want to thank everybody who came into the studio today. Avia Moore was here to talk about her play The Dybbuk, the Karina Rose Band. Joe Weiner worked hard doing some of the technical side of the production for today's show. So thank you to Joe, and thank you to Nicole Hébert for teching and putting up with the mayhem. It's always exciting when you do something new. And this is the first time we've had a full live band in the Shtetl studio. So if you want to listen to this show or find out about any of the things that we talked about today and what's going on in the alternative scene in Jewish arts and culture, you can go to shtetlmontreal.com. We're going to close out with one more song by the amazing Karina Rose. What song are you guys going to play?
The song is called Misty Mornings. It's a song that Matt and I have probably been playing together for about 5 years now. So it's an oldie for us anyway, but a good one. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming on, guys.
Cool. It was awesome.
sidewalks, I am listening to the conversations made up in my